freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Weir, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Good morning. This is the Brock and Salk Show, but it's Maura Dooley and Justin Barnes starting off the day with you again. We'll be doing that a couple more days here before Salk's back from vacation. And today we have Brady Henderson in with Brock Heward starting at 7 a.m. So they will be here the rest of the show. We're taking you through the first hour. God, there was so much going on in the sports world last night, Justin.
It was a big, and I was trying to like balance three or four things. No, I did not. And I was like trying to listen to the Mariners game in one ear, watch the basketball on one screen. I had my iPad out with a Kraken going. It's tough to follow along with everything.
Yeah, I watched like the beginning and the end of the Kraken game, but then I watched a little bit of Kansas State, Michigan State. Mm-hmm. I kept checking the Mariners score, and boy, were they on fire offensively last night.
Yeah, there were like three really good games that were close and like two absolute blowouts.
Yeah.
I'll just say it now. I'll take it before you're going to throw it at me, because I know I was wrong on the UConn-Arkansas game. I called that as an upset, and that was quite the opposite.
You know what's funny is I put in our notes last night, like, good call, Justin. I totally thought you picked it the right way.
Oh,
I wasn't
no.
trying to troll you.
That's what I took. I was like, oh, she's just going to throw that? Okay.
No,
I couldn't
remember. I thought you picked it.
No, and then I was like, wait, did I? So I went back and listened to it and said, nope, I called this game as the upset, and then it being like a 20-point disaster the other way. By the way, Arkansas is just blowing people out. Like, it's... None of them have been particularly close, I think, for the entire tournament for them. So good on them. I was wrong. I'll admit it. And we'll move on. But the Mariners blow out as well. What, 17-6?
UConn blew Arkansas out.
Oh, yes. Sorry. I'm the other way around. Totally, yes. UConn's been blowing
Eric Musselman had to keep his shirt on this time.
That's right. At least he got that moment in the tournament.
Well, we will get to everything that went down last night. But do you know what's happening this weekend?
Supercross, Saturday. Are you going? Do you want to go?
What
I should ask. Supercross is the Seattle stop is this weekend. Tomorrow.
I thought you were going to talk about the Elite Eight or...
The Elite Eight is also happening.
Supercross?
The Seattle Supercross, yes.
Okay. Where is that at?
That's at Lumen Field.
All right.
Oh, man. You got to go to a Supercross one time. Then you got monster trucks, I think, that are
opposed,
coming in next
but
weekend.
But maybe not this weekend.
Yeah. Why?
Because I'll be watching
basketball.
The Elite Eight.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, Supercross.
But the other thing that's happening, I don't know if you remember a couple years ago, it's been that long that this was in the works. I got a DM on Instagram during the show.
Okay.
And I talked to you and Salk about it in break. Someone asking me if I would consider being on the show Love is Blind.
Oh, that's right.
The reality dating show on Netflix.
That's no way. That's been 2 years.
Yeah. They because they asked me to submit an application like Thanksgiving before last.
Okay. So Love is Blind is a show where they can't see each other and they talk and then decide they want to see each other.
Yeah. They put them in these like dating pods. So they're different rooms, but they can hear each other. And you date different people for like 10 days. And if you want to actually be able to see the person, you have to propose.
Oh,
one of you has to
propose.
Yeah.
No, Brad, no big deal.
And then you get to see each other. Then they send you on a vacation to Mexico for like a week.
Okay.
And then you come back and you have to live your normal lives together for like 4 or 5 weeks while they tape you.
Set
up a wedding. And you have to show up to it. You don't have to get married, but you have to show up to it dressed for the wedding and everything. And then at the altar, decide whether you're going to go through with it or
so
not.
So when I remember this happening, this is an absurd premise. But I remember when this happening, was it just Seattle? Do all these series or seasons go from city to city? Or was
yes.
this the first time they've done a city?
They started, I'm trying to remember where the first one was. I know they've done Chicago.
Okay.
I think they've done Atlanta.
Okay.
So
what you're saying is we're going to see Seattle people on Love is Blind starting.
I just wanted to let you know that I did not get picked. First of all, they had to like coax me into doing it. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm a little too old for this. And she was like, no, you're great. Can I call you? So she calls me, like asks me all these questions, tells me she thinks I'm perfect, that I don't even have to send a video, just fill out the application. So I was like, I don't know. I talked to all my friends. Everyone talked me into it. Like, it'll be an experience. And then I fill out the application and nothing. I got ghosted.
What do you think it was?
I don't know. Either it was me or also Salk asked me a couple times about it on air. And I do think they like to keep this stuff top secret, like who's going to be on the show. So that may not have helped.
We can blame Salk. That's fine.
I don't know. But anyways, probably for the best. I don't think I'm the reality TV type. But anyways,
that's what I was going to ask you.
The Seattle season starts this weekend.
Okay. I was going to ask you, do you think they went through your application and were like, actually, she's not crazy. She's too normal.
I don't know. Who knows? We'll go with that, right. Hopefully. But it starts this weekend. I'm kind of excited to see who they actually did pick. And Seattle feels like such a small, big city. I kind of feel like a lot of us might know someone
yeah.
That's
well,
on it.
I mean, maybe some of them will be at the Supercross, too, where we can cross both of these if you'd like to join.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way, let's get to some actual sports. The Gonzaga game, I think, is where we need to start.
Yeah.
There was a couple of big finishes in college basketball last night, but this was so fun. Gonzaga defeats UCLA 79-76 to head to the Elite Eight for the third time in the past four seasons. UCLA kind of felt in control most of the game. They held a 13-point lead at the half, but Gonzaga fought their way back in the second half with some great offensive rebounding and another impressive performance from Drew Timmy. He ended the night with 36 points, 13 rebounds. A Malachi Smith jumper with 2 minutes and 30 seconds left gave the Bulldogs a 10-point lead, but UCLA just did not want to go away. They were not giving up. They fought back, and Amari Bailey hit a 3 to give UCLA a 1-point lead with about 13 seconds left. Like, I thought that game was over.
Yep.
But right out of the timeout that UCLA called after that, Julian Strother came back with a 3 from way beyond the arc.
Oh, because you've also dominated the offensive glass. Chances are you'll get more than one opportunity. Walker for the lead.
Unbelievable where he pulled up from on that.
Yeah, it was quite the shot.
Did you know that last night's game was the 17-year anniversary to the day of the infamous Adam Morrison inconsolable on the court.
Sweet, I think Gonzaga came back from like 11 points behind. Yeah, yeah. I did not know that, but I read it this morning. Yeah.
Yes.
So poetic justice.
Of course, Morrison was in Las Vegas last night as well. He was calling
game.
He was calling the game on the radio.
On one of the broadcasts. That's really cool. Well, I mean, maybe. I don't know if it makes you feel any better when you're not a player anymore and you see other. It's still your alma mater, right? Like, you
Yeah. But, man, Drew Timmy was nails. And then up until, I guess, the point where he couldn't make a free throw at the end or to save himself. But
well, yeah, and he did say in the post game that Strother saved him, and he's a fan for life.
Man, he just took on all of GU and just buttered that thing. I mean, I can't even really describe what he just did. It's crazy. It's just like that Jaylen shot, man. But it's crazy. I can't even really describe it. I'm not speechless too much, and I'm pretty speechless after that. I mean, but I am the number one Julian Strother fan forever now.
As he should be. My God, that was great.
It was just a clutch moment. Yeah, and that iced the game for Gonzaga after just both teams launching their own comebacks. It was a pretty exciting one. And then did you also get to see Kansas State?
I didn't. No, I only got to see the highlights of this one. I didn't get to watch it live, but I did see the way it ended and was similar heartbreak fashion.
For Michigan State.
I thought that they had a chance to tie it.
Quite the game. This one, they couldn't even decide in regulation. Number 3 Kansas State defeated number 7 Michigan State 96-93 in overtime to advance to the Elite Eight, and it's their first time since 2018. Back and forth battle, all of regulation. Michigan State's guard Tyson Walker hit a layup with 6 seconds left to send it to overtime. There were 5 lead changes and 3 ties in overtime.
So this is the best tournament, especially for the little college basketball I watch. It's so good. And it makes me wonder, like, why don't I watch more of this? Since I get such a heavy dose in March that I feel like I'm totally satisfied and fulfilled on it.
Well, it's hard. Like, earlier on in the college basketball season, I'm always so focused on football.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's
true. Yeah, I mean, these games just mean so much more. And
UW has not been good for a while, so it's kind of easy for me to put it out of my mind.
True.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm excited for the Elite Eight. I'm excited for Supercross. I'm excited for you to watch Love is Blind. What else?
I'm going to be alternating between Love is Blind and the
Elite Eight. We haven't
even
got to talk about the Mariners blowout yet. I guess we'll get to that in Need to Know.
Yes, we will. The Craig in the 425 sent us a text that says, Barnes and Dooley sounds like a Montana podcast.
It does, actually. It sounds like a truck stop.
Does it? Yeah. Oh, great.
It does.
what we talk about on our truck stop podcast.
We'll figure that out during the break, I guess. But
motocross.
We can talk about Supercross this Saturday. Let's go, Maura. I'm going Cooper Webb all the way for anybody who's actually going to that. Let's go,
all right,
Cooper
sounds
Webb.
Good. Coming up next, we're going to tell you everything you need to know. Go through all those scores from last night. At 6:30, we are going to revisit Jerry DePoto's interview with Ryan Roland-Smith and Brock yesterday. It was a great one, so stay tuned. You're listening to The Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Seahawks GM John Schneider joined Wyman and Bob yesterday and said, signing Devin Bush does not rule out bringing back linebacker Bobby Wagner.
No, you know, we've been talking to Bobby what I can tell you is we'll see, you know, what shakes out, see how this goes.
So not a lot of information there, but he does say it does not exclude the Bobby Wagner from a return. He also said they haven't shut the door on Al Woods. They are just working through some of the intricacies of the salary cap right now, and they did need to kind of get his contract off the books, so we'll see if there is room for a return there. Schneider and Carroll were in Alabama taking selfies with Bryce Young yesterday. They will be in Kentucky today, and he confirmed that they will head to Florida for their pro day next week. So Will Levis and Anthony Richardson selfies up next.
It's like they're trying to collect all of them just for what reason? Like, we don't know.
What is
like,
it, Pokemon?
Right, yeah. Gotta get them. We're going to, I'm sure, dive into this more with Brock because I saw his tweet last night asking, like, what does this mean? Like double rainbow guy or something. But yeah, I'll go back to what I said about Bobby Wagner a couple days ago or yesterday. The fan of me wants him at a fiscally responsible number.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, we just went through a little bit of this, but a lot of action in college basketball last night. UConn dominated Arkansas 88-65. Number 9 Florida Atlantic beat number 4 Tennessee 62-55. And number 3 Kansas State defeated number 7 Michigan State 96-93 in overtime. Once they went to overtime, there were 5 lead changes and 3 ties. Ultimately, Ismael Massoud hit a jumper with 17 seconds left to give Kansas State a 3-point lead. But Marquise Noel, who was huge for Kansas State, came up with a steal and a layup to seal the win.
Here's Hauser, gives it up. Clock ticks. Hall finding Walker. Walker already stripped by Noel. Ball is loose. Noel comes out of the pack. Noel dribbles and he lays it in. Count the basket and Kansas State wins it. The Wildcats are headed for the Elite Eight. What a game!
It was fitting that Noel was the one to put the exclamation point on the victory because he had himself a night. 20 points, 3 rebounds, and 19 assists, which are the most ever in an NCAA tournament.
Wow, 19 assists.
Yeah.
But tonight we have San Diego State, Alabama, so a 5-1. Miami Houston, 5-1. Xavier, Texas, a 3-2. And then Princeton, 15. Creighton, number 6. It's at 6 p.m. So, man, this is the most fun. I wish I wouldn't have filled out a bracket because I feel like I distracted myself for the first 5 days of the tournament instead of just enjoying what was going on. But I'm going to do it again, Maura. Princeton, give me another upset.
You're riding with Princeton?
Today, okay. 6 p.m. Let's go, Princeton.
All right. Well, I'll forget which one you picked and think that you did all right again on Monday.
Thank you.
So we'll be good. And then, as we mentioned off the top there, Gonzaga defeats UCLA 79-76, heading to the Elite Eight for the third time in the past 4 seasons. A Malachi Smith jumper with 2 minutes 30 seconds left gave the Bulldogs a 10-point lead, but UCLA fought back, and with 13 seconds left, Amari Bailey of UCLA hit a 3-pointer to give them a 1-point lead. But right out of the ensuing UCLA timeout, Gonzaga's Julian Strother hit a 3 from like 5 feet beyond the arc.
Oh, because you've also dominated the offensive glass. Chances are you'll get more than one opportunity.
Walker for the lead.
I remember listening to this early in the season before we talked to Mark Few. I listened to some Gonzaga podcasts, and there was a couple guys, and one of them was talking with Dan Dickow about who they'd trust to take some, who was going to be the guy late in the season, and both of them mentioned Julian Strother.
Yeah, he told reporters after that he asked for permission, and the response from Few was profanity laden, but with like excited
approval.
Profanity. So yes, he got the okay.
Thanks. Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, it's good to have the whole squad back together again for the Mariners. Now that everyone's back from the WBC, they basically held batting practice last night in a 17-6 trouncing of the Reds. Sam Haggerty, Tom Murphy, Teoscar Hernandez, Eugenio Suarez, and Julio Rodriguez all hit home runs. Julio went 3-for-3 with a walk and 3 RBI. Here's his home run.
Here's a pitch to Julio. Swung on and blasted to right center field. Doesn't have enough. It is gone. Julio, 2-run home run. 15-2. It's just silly now. Julio, 2 doubles and a homer. What is happening?
Are they laughing at the home run or the score? Because remember we brought this up last year of how many times you heard broadcasters just giggle when Julio does something.
I think it was the score, but I mean, he's pretty someone to be in awe
of
as well.
I'm sure Mariners fans, and some of them already know this, but 9 of those runs in one inning came off of, I believe, no, not one inning. I'm sorry. There was a 7-inning run, but 9 of those runs came off of Brandon Williamson.
Yeah, it was a rough day for him.
The Mariners traded, of course, in the Winker and Suarez deal.
Poor guy.
Yeah, tough day for Brandon Williamson.
All right, we will move on to the Kraken. They got on the board just minutes into the first against the Predators with a beautiful backhand pass from Geeky to Daniel Sprong, who was running out of real estate before the net and somehow managed to bank it off of Preds goalie Yusei Soros.
Both teams are changing. Very active goaltender for the Predators and Soros. Got to try to keep the puck away from him. Here's a chance for Sprong. He's able and he does! Daniel Sprong! A magician from in back of the goal. 17:32 left in the first period. The Kraken off and running.
Joey DeCord was called upon for goalie duties again with Philip Grubauer still unavailable with that illness. DeCord played remarkably well in his second game since being called up from Coachella Valley Monday with 23 saves on 24 shots. The Kraken could not take advantage of multiple power play opportunities, and yet another game goes to overtime. And then to a shootout, where the Kraken would lose, but at least come away with a point. The Kraken have been in 3 shootouts this year and have lost each one. They face the Predators again Saturday before a tough matchup Monday with the Minnesota Wild, who are currently in 2nd place in the Central Division.
And shout out to Ryan Fisher on Twitter, who tweeted this last night, saying, I hope you give Joey DeCord his flowers tomorrow. The Kraken had no business getting that OT point without him standing on his head all game long. Kid was phenomenal.
Yeah. No, very true. He's been put in a tough position the last couple games, and yeah, he did a great job. Honestly, I felt like the Kraken played well overall, but you just got to start taking advantage of some of those power play opportunities.
Yeah, the whole season, I think we mentioned this on Monday or Tuesday, it's like, I just cannot understand their power play is just like kryptonite. Like the second it happens, it just, they fall apart. Both ways.
Yeah.
They can't kill one, and they can't score on one.
Hopefully they can get this next one against the Predators. Things are coming down to the wire.
Yeah, this
here.
Is not the time to mess this up. Yeah. Yep.
All right, well, we're going to switch back gears to baseball next. Meeting with Jerry Dipoto, Ryan Roland-Smith, and Brock Huard talked to him yesterday. That's coming up next. And then at the top of the hour, Brady Henderson and Brock Huard will take over. You're listening to the Brock and Salk Show here on Seattle Sports 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
The Jerry Dipoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports.
Yep, others know him as Dipoto. We know him as Dripoto because he is drippy. Yep. The Maura and Justin, Jerry, were just sharing the story with Ryan about how you just, your swag, your drip, it just kind of went viral when we got to hang out together in Peoria a couple weeks ago.
Ryan's got the big drip. Yeah, you know, that's his bag too. So there's good.
He does.
Drip it all over.
Yeah, this is going to be a very drippy segment. I'm going to start with an easy one, a little softball for you. We're 7 days away from spring training. We were down there a few weeks ago. The afternoon show is down there now. If you wouldn't mind, scouting department-wise, any way you want to take this, Jerry, compare and contrast the morning show and the afternoon show.
I think the biggest difference, and I don't feel guilty about sharing this because I shared it with Bob last night, the biggest difference is you guys got your business done. You were in, you were out. And just saying it like it is. I mean, Bob's like John Belushi from Saturday Night Live. He's like the that thing that wouldn't leave. He's there all day, and it's morning till night. Last night I asked, hey, we got to start charging you rent, man. I don't know if he's eating all the food, what it is, but they are a constant presence. So good for them for sticking it out.
Jerry, is this something, and you mentioned the fact that he's hanging around like a bad smell. Is this something with the clubhouse and the staff, the players? You guys want those loiterers, you want them out of the way, or are you happy to bring people in? Are you happy to have some visitors from time to time?
No, I think that this group really enjoys it. Now, you know, I say that jokingly. We love having people around. And, you know, our players are really engaging. The group around the team, you know, our front office, our coaching staff and support staff, why we get to do what we do is because people pay attention. And people pay attention because there's people here to help them connect to what's going on with the Mariners. And, you know, I think it's one of the really fun parts of spring training is there's not a ton of pressure. You're preparing for a season. And you walk out on the deck every morning and, you know, there's a radio group sitting on the deck. You've got the writers waiting to talk, and they intermingle, you know, they move in and out. They're around the cages. They're around the fields. They have access to places, locations that they wouldn't during the regular season necessarily have access to. And I think that's a really cool part of the spring is that intimacy.
Jerry DePoto here with us. What are you paying attention to in the final 7 days here before we kick this thing off a week from today?
You know, mostly just hoping that we stay in the position we're in, you know, from a health perspective. We've had a good spring and, you know, we've been fortunate again in the fact that for the most part we're healthy as we, you know, are just a week away from opening day, and I'd like to stay that way. We've had no real major issues, a couple of dings and bruises that you know aren't convenient, but it certainly puts us ahead of most teams. That's number one. You'd like to see how those last couple of roster spots play out. We've got a really good idea on how that's going to happen, but you know, you leave the door at least cracked for some, you know, late minute heroics. But I would say that the roster is 99.9% certain for us right now, and just it's all about health. And if we get to the end of this with the same, you know, group of players that are currently playing healthy, I'm really excited about what happens for us starting on opening day.
Jerry, you talked about, we heard a couple of comments talking about this is the most fun you've had in spring training. And you talked about, you know, some of that team chemistry, you know, being stable, the culture here being stable. And, you know, I've always found that you bring in new players and sometimes they have a plus or they have a, you know, they can be detrimental to that culture. But with some of the new players that we don't know a whole lot about yet, obviously until the season starts, but is there anyone or, you know, a couple of them that have come in and had an impact on that culture or, you know, come in and just added to that culture that you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the point. And I think it's all of them. And I think if you ask our players, you know, the guys who've been around here for a couple of years, guys like Ty and Marco and JP and, you know, the group that you've seen, Jared Kelnick, Julio, that are familiar with how our culture has evolved over the years. And especially this group in the clubhouse and from last year, especially to this year, but AJ Pollock and Colton Wong and Teoscar Hernandez, you know, those have been the most notable acquisitions of our offseason. And they have fit in seamlessly. You know, Trevor Gott looks like he's been in our bullpen for years. It's the guys, Cooper Hummel, who came into the camp without a lot of major league history, but very quickly, you know, assimilated. And I think some guys that fly under the radar for us, Gabe Spire and Justin Topa, and it's that they're the group has really, you know, absorbed the new guys and they've assimilated very quickly. It's such a great group of guys, truly. And I've never been fortunate enough in my career to be around this many guys that fit so well together. And not just as a puzzle, you know, on the field, but in the things they do off the field, how much they enjoy playing together, the way they engage with the fans and the people around them. It's every day. And I'm proud of that.
That's why Belushi's hanging around all day. You realize that? Like, this is such a good, yes, this is why he's there, because it's such a good group. You know that Salk is way savvier than I am, Jerry. So I just have to ask you point blank, because he asked you about a third catcher and kind of set all that up a week ago. All Hummel has done is continue to hit. I think he tied Jared with his fourth spring home run as well. With the injury, unfortunately, to Dylan Moore, does that make the challenge of Hummel starting on the opening day roster or being a part of that opening day roster more difficult?
Not at all. Actually, his performance is making it a heck of a lot easier to make that decision. And you know, Cooper came in with 1 foot on the 26-man roster, as opposed to just having to make it. We really value what he does in the batter's box. And I think that's been reinforced this spring. He does things, you know, if I were to sit here and walk through all of the Mariners tenets, the things we believe in offensively, he does all those things. And along the way, we realized his tools are louder than we thought they were. He can throw, he can really run. He's an athletic guy. And you know, it's when you hear catcher, you know, the first thing you think is, you know, big power and the run producer types. And Cooper, he gets on base, he manages the strike zone, he's got speed, he has real power, he's a switch hitter, and he's got enough positional versatility that it gives him utility around the field. And yeah, there's a reason why we targeted him in the trade with Arizona, and I'm pretty fired up to see what he does with a little bit of runway in a new organization.
Jerry, I've got a World Baseball Classic question for you. Obviously, he got rave reviews. Everyone loved it. The ratings were through the roof. Major League Baseball just, you know, loving the fact that it's USA versus Japan, Ohtani, Trout. But from your position, it can be, you know, a little bit of a distraction or get in the way of what you're trying to do. You talked about some of that team chemistry and the culture you have. Is this the time of year? Is this because this is going to be something that's going to be on the calendar every, what, 3 or 4 years moving forward, obviously. Is this the time of year, do you think, is the best time to have it in the month of March during spring training?
You know, I don't know that there's really another time to have it for, you know, the purposes of competitive baseball other than the WBC. So, you know, for the 30 teams who are out there trying to compete and win a World Series, you know, the goal is to, over a 162 game season, to time it up with your players, their health, and all of the different factors that go into it. And you want to be able to rest your players at the appropriate time. You don't want to start and stop, you know. But, you know, having said that, if you're trying to play the WBC at its optimal level of competition, it probably happens in the middle of the summer. And, you know, because that's when we're seeing the baseball players. It's why we say he's in midseason form, you know. That's about when you're seeing that midpoint, when the players have enough innings, they're in their grooves, you know. And I say that at the same time, that's a really tough time to shut it down on the teams in the league. So what we're watching right now at the WBC, you know, I was out to dinner the other night, and as soon as the ninth inning started, the whole restaurant stopped, and they had the, you know, everybody turned, the wait staff, everything, to watch the TV. So it's a wonderful event. I don't know that, like anything else, it's ever going to be perfect. It's probably an imperfect timing, but as we just saw, you can still create unbelievable moments and drama, even if the timing is imperfect.
Hey, Jerry, Maura is doing a great job of holding me accountable to answering questions on a pitch clock or asking questions, because I had a minute-long question yesterday. So I apologize. This
minute
one's going to
15, but...
Okay, well, this one's going to take a little time to set up, too, because you said something right there. Tools are louder than we thought they were. And it got my weird middle child left-handed mind thinking, what if I took Jerry DePoto and I put blindfold on him and you went through your entire organization and you just listened? And you listened to the mitt popping and you listened to batting practice. How quickly you would immediately go, yep, that's big leaguer. Yep, that's starter. Yep, that's Julio. Yep. Do you think, like, if you took the sense of your eyes away, just with your ears, you could hear your stars?
Wow. I feel like it is very late at night in my college dorm room somewhere in 1987. But, you know, in this one, I'd like to think so, but, you know, I guess it's worth the late night challenge somewhere. The guys with those big tools, it does sound different. And when you're around the batting cage, when Julio takes BP, frankly, when you're around the batting cage, when JK takes BP, when Teoscar Hernandez squares something up, you know, Nelson Cruz really comes to mind, who probably had about as loud a sound in the batting cage as you're going to have. And, you know, it's the same thing with the pitchers. Yeah, it's the guys who have that really loud stuff, the thunderous, you know, mitt. And I say that, and you throw a bullpen in one ballpark as opposed to another, the acoustics of the walls around you can really make you sound a lot better than you are. Yeah. And, you know, it's I'd prefer to use my eyes, but, you know, as I think about it, you know, the biggest, the best players on the planet, you do get a sound from them that's just, you know, unlike the others around.
Speaking of sound, do we need new batteries in that fire? Is that a fire smoke detector? Is that the chirp? A smoke detector. We had an old colleague of ours, smoke detector batteries would always chirp when we chatted with John. Any, do we need new batteries?
No, that's actually the back door, as my wife is letting nice. Archie in and out to do his morning business.
That's the Airbnb.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a bad review on the Airbnb in Arizona right now. Hey, Jerry, speaking of, you know, and this is kind of a follow up on Brock's question, the late night dorm room talking about blindfolding mitts popping, but Andrés Muñoz, I cannot wait to watch this guy pitch. I love watching, you know, the kind of the where he went in when he found that slider last year, but he's taken on a two seamer now. So where did, and this is something that I'm curious, man, when you got a guy throwing 100 plus with that slider, what is the two seamer? What is the, you know, reasoning behind that, and what are we trying to get out of that two seamer, and where'd that come from?
Well, you know, he actually started doing it just a little bit before we went into the postseason last year, and you know, he started fielding around with it in the bullpen. You know, why is, and this is credit to Trent Blank, to Pete Woodworth, Max Wiener, who overall in our minor league system oversees our pitching. Now, one of the mantras that our group marches to is just constantly trying to get better. And, you know, Mooney was having a fabulous year, but, you know, he's watching George Kirby come up with this two-seamer and changes his profile or his world. You know, Robbie Ray in a moment picks up a two-seamer and starts throwing it in the game. And he thought, what if I did? And I think the, you know, pitchers this spring who have, you know, attempted to work on, you know, pick up, adopt another pitch, Logan, Robbie Ray. There have been a number of them who've come into camp throwing a new pitch. And I think the impetus or the desire is just to get better. And, you know, Mooney's throwing a 100-mile-an-hour runner, you know, it bores, and I don't want to call it a sinker. It just chases right-handed hitters and you can't get it off of you. And, you know, we'll see where it goes, but it just gives him another look and another element to make a hitter uncomfortable. And, you know, and I admire the fact that despite the fact that he was unquestionably excellent last season, he went into his off season and came into his spring trying to get better.
Jerry, whose numbers here in the spring don't really tell the story on either side?
Colton Wong. And Colton Wong has been, we said it last night, while he's not jumping off the page in terms of the you know, spring training performance, what he's doing every day in the morning defensive drills and interacting with his teammates and the quality of his at-bats and the quality of his contact, you know, he has had a very good spring, despite the fact that it just looks okay on a spreadsheet or a baseball card. You know, he stands out as that guy. And I'm certain that there are pitchers that line up in that. But frankly, most of our pitchers are having pretty phenomenal springs. And even by the standards of the tough spring in Arizona, where typically the offense is going to be ahead of the pitching, our pitching has been really good down here.
Speaking of the pitching, Robbie Ray, he has looked really good. You know, physically, the velo's up. Everything just looks sharp. What is this an adjustment he made this offseason? Did he go away saying, you know what, I want to have, you know, a little bit more consistency when it comes to the having the velo up. Was there anything that he changed this offseason coming into this year?
Did he go down to the sand hill in Australia and train with Ryan's father?
He may have, secretly. I don't want to give that away, but you know, maybe Jerry can spill the beans on that, not me.
Wherever he trained, I'd like to sign up others to go try it with him. The first thing that really that you notice the moment you see Robbie on February 13th or whenever the first day I saw him, he looks different. He went home and he got after it in the weight room. It's very clear. He leaned up. He looks incredibly athletic. And from the very first bullpen, you could tell that there was more life in his arm. And I think this is, I don't know if we had a pitcher last spring who was affected more by the lengthy, layoff, the off season, the lockout, et cetera, than Robbie. I think the media tour, following a Cy Young season followed by a lockout, and Robbie makes his home in a cold weather state where there wasn't a lot of opportunity to throw and not knowing when spring training would start. So, I do think that we're getting a better look at what, Robbie's off-season prep and, what he might look like in March and April, much more so than we did a year ago. And right now, he's throwing as well or better than at any point since he's been a Mariner. The velocity is way up. The crispness of his slider is like it was last year in August, to be fair. And Robbie is one of the most dominant strikeout pitchers truly of all time when he's on his game. And right now he's on his game.
A couple last minutes here with Jerry DePoto. You mentioned 99% of the roster is basically in view for your guys. I'm guessing around the league, GMs and presidents and teams trying to do the same with theirs. Jerry, does that lead to any possibility if there was going to be a move made before the regular season begins? Is there any possibility that could happen over the next 7 days?
It's possible. We've started to receive the check-in phone calls from a variety of clubs as they get toward the end. And, not surprisingly, teams want to check in with us on pitching depth because that is something, where we have a little bit more of. And they, they've made their check-ins and our position remains the same. We're not truly interested in depleting our own resources unless it makes sense for us. And, if the opportunity that arises, whatever it is, makes sense for us, we'll check into it closer. Don't know that we'll do anything. I've said this before. I like our team. I really do. I like our team the way it is right now. This team likes to play together. We've got a lot of talent. I feel like we have a legitimate major league contributor at every position. And with the one question mark that we had that we were hoping out two, I guess. One was what was left field going to look like? And right now we couldn't be any more excited than what left field looks like. And the other was, where are you going to go with DH? And, we've got Teoscar. We knew we were going to start to file guys through and have days for Teo, have guys for Ty France, or days for Ty France, have a day for Cal or Murph. And the one thing that is really given us more confidence in where we are is how well Cooper Hummel has performed. And we think the combination of players we have is interesting enough to make a go of.
Jerry, real quick from me, is there one player who is down in the minor leagues right now that maybe we've talked about a lot, maybe we haven't, but he's going to make it, that you could predict, and not trying to put any pressure on you or the player, but can predict that they can have a George Kirby type impact on this team that for 2023?
Wow. I mean, that would probably be short selling George Kirby's impact because George showed up and pitched like the second half of the season, he pitched like a Cy Young Award winner. I mean, he was that good in the second half. And I think actually from the All-Star break to the end, only Justin Verlander in the American League had a higher WAR than George. So that's a pretty high bar is to step in and do that. But we do have a number of players, and I guess the two that really jump out among those who obviously aren't making the team and have already been reassigned to minor league camp are Bryce Miller and Prelander Varela. The greater likelihood is that they will spend as much time in the minor leagues as they need to get ready. I don't really know what spot they take because right now we have 13 pitchers that we project to break with, and we think they're all good. So, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know what the timing is or how it happens, but we feel like we're protected and Bryce can go out there and we feel like start a major league game right now with impact stuff. He also has the ability to slide into a bullpen where who knows how much it could even pick up from a physical stuff perspective. And Perlander's physical ability, you know, that the from velocity to slider spin to just general nastiness, is we could envision him stepping into a bullpen role in the second half of the season and being that guy, that extra weapon that you need coming down the stretch.
Next time we talk to you, it is going to be on opening day. That sounds really good. 7 days from day, the home opener. Last two final questions from Arizona. Number one, are you packed?
I am packed. Actually, the car's in the garage running. But we are packed and we'll be headed back pretty soon.
Lastly, best thing you ate this month in Arizona?
Best thing I ate this month in Arizona. Oof. So we went to sushi. A core in Scottsdale. And if I had to pick one thing of the variety of wonderful things that we ate at Sushi Core, they had this A5 Wagyu beef that they put on a little grill, like an open grill on your table, almost like a Korean barbecue setup. And you know, they just, I want to say it's just lightly, you know, touched the flame and then it was just like butter. It was pretty magical dining experience, actually.
Well, I don't know many that are more generous with time and insight, transparency than you, Jerry. We sure appreciate it every single Thursday. Cannot wait, just like you and everybody else, to get this thing started next week. Have a great trip home. We'll look forward to chatting with you next week. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, guys.
All right, that was Jerry DePoto talking to Ryan Roland-Smith and Brock Huard yesterday. Coming up now, we're going to have Brady Henderson in for Mike Salk with Brock Huard. They'll be in the rest of the show. We have G. Scott coming up at 8:30. David Schoenfeld from ESPN was one of the writers on the MLB Top 100 Players that they wrote up, and he has a bold prediction for the Mariners. He's going to be joining us at 7:30, and we'll have Bob Stelton from Peoria at 9 a.m. today. Stay tuned on the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports 710 and the Seattle Sports app.